It's a rare person who hasn't looked down at least once in a while, with or without a scale, and thought, you know, I could stand to lose a few pounds. Today's guest got to such a moment, and probably more than once. By age 20, she weighed 268 pounds, and a doctor had already shown her a chart warning where her weight and health were headed if she didn't change. So, Andrea Andy Mitchell did change over time. How she got so heavy in the first place and how she got her weight and her approach to food under control are the focus of her memoir, It Was Me All Along. Andy Mitchell is a freelance writer and recipe developer who lives in New York City. You can see what she's cooking up on her blog, Can You Stay for Dinner? Andy, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So the starting point for our discussion is the starting point for the book. It's your 20th birthday, 268 pounds, and the story of you and your birthday cake is, well, it's good reading anyway. What happened?
Thank you.
What happened?
Oh, you know, there's this one cake, so it's a sour cream fudge cake, and I love this cake. You know, it's you know, decadent, it's indulgent, and I've made it so many times. I've made it throughout my life, and always on my birthday. And on my 20th birthday, I'm making the cake, assuming that I'm going to be sharing it with friends and family at my birthday party. And so I describe it in the book in this kind of, you know, almost sensuous way, the baking process. And so I make it and I say, oh, but, you know, maybe I'll just take a lick of frosting. And so I do that. And then maybe I'll just carve a little slice and I take a slice. And slowly, slice by slice, I end up eating the entire cake, which for anyone who's ever kind of felt that loss of control around food is such a shameful, guilty experience. And it's, you know, it's one that I think a lot of us, whether or not you've eaten a whole cake before, you know, experience with food, you know, that maybe that guilt or that shame about what we've done.
You use the word sensuous, which I think is good here, because I must admit that as I read your descriptions of life in kitchens, it does sound sort of like romance.
Yeah, it's like, it's very... I think food has that for me. You know, food is very seductive to me. And I think, I don't think it's altogether bad that food is like a very pleasurable experience. And I think that getting in touch with how pleasurable it can be and really tuning in with, you know, with how great it can be is, you know, a very helpful part of me losing weight eventually and becoming mindful of what I'm eating. But it's also kind of like the reckless abandon with which I like ate for many, many years was because I almost got in this zone with eating where I was like entranced by food. And it was like this almost like hedonistic, you know, crazy, you know, power that food had over me. And it was like this, you know, just almost like a complete loss of control with it.
You know, we talk about people with addictions as having to fill a hole in their lives, and but this was a real literal kind of thing. I mean, you really did want to be filled up with food.
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, I think I've gone back and forth with, for years, you know, I wondered, you know, I talk in the book a lot about how my dad struggled with alcoholism, and there's many people in my family, I feel, struggle with addictions, and so I think there's part of many of us that, you know, we have these genetic predispositions to addictive behaviors. And so if I label myself as a food addict, do I ever recover from it? Or is there any, you know, any getting better? And I do think that to a really high degree, like food has been a very big addiction in my life. And I've felt like this complete loss of control with it. And the thing is, the reasons that we eat are just the ways that we're ever going to recover. And I think for me, I was eating for so many reasons. And the problem with it being so many reasons is that, like, oh my gosh, you have to unpack all of them. You know, it's not just one. It's everything. It's like food is tied to making me feel comforted, making me feel like less angry, or if I'm frustrated, or, you know, anything, you can turn to food and it's there, and it's something you can control. And it's hard. And I think many people feel that.
You're describing the book being a food fanatic by age five, and your mother was often your partner in the kitchen. Talk about the time you spent with her in the kitchen growing up. It sounds like you learned to cook pretty early.
I did. I loved, you know, baking, especially with her. My mom is the type that really likes to make things from scratch, and she always, you know, she was making homemade crackers and everything, and she's one of those people that really believes that food is love. You know, it's not uncommon, but it was amazing just having kind of undivided attention and time with her, where we would just spend a day making cupcakes or cookies and get ready for, maybe we were getting ready for a party or making a dinner for our family. And I would learn from her, and it's joyful making something that you know is going to be special or it's going to be shared. So I think even in the baking process with my mom, it lent itself to later in my life kind of getting into this now passion that I have for, you know, healthier cooking, let's say. But it was such a, it was, you know, even in times when my life felt chaotic when I was young, those baking moments were always really nice. You know, those were like a moment of, you know, a joy for us.
Real sense of warmth and security, comfort for sure. Yeah. Let's come back and talk more with Andy Mitchell on the Jefferson Exchange. Her memoir about her problems wrestling with weight and food is called It Was Me All Along. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Andy and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to visit with us. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Andrea Mitchell, but not the one from NBC News. It's Andy Mitchell, who is a recipe developer and freelance writer in New York, and she's not that old, but has already had to deal with weight issues in her life. She weighed 268 pounds on her 20th birthday and then realized, you know, maybe it's time to do something about this. Her memoir of how she got to that point and how she got from it is It Was Me All Along. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Phone number here, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I need to come back to what we've been calling you. What is a recipe developer, Andy?
Well, you know, the reason I say recipe developer is because, so I develop recipes just on my site. I create healthier recipes, but I also have worked with different brands in the past. You know, they'll contract me to make a recipe for them. So it'll be, you know, me creating a recipe, maybe photographing it, and then writing about it, either for their brand or on my own website or in whatever, you know, kind of platform they'd like, on social media or things like that. So, It's a really fun way to work and to be able to kind of play with food.
And the website is fun. We'll have to make sure we provide a link to that as well. Can You Stay for Dinner is the website. There's some fun things there for sure. Have you ever received any real rigorous training in cooking? I mean, you've obviously been doing it for a very long time.
Yeah, no, I have not. I have not had any formal training, you know, other than my own kind of like crazy playing in the kitchen. But, you know, other than taking a few cooking classes here and there, nothing formal.
Yeah, and your mom obviously was one of your major trainers, and you describe her methods of catering as massive, more massive, and most massive. So I guess you got used to having lots of food around when there was certainly enough money in the house for it.
Yes. Yeah. See, I mean, you know, I think she had, and I say this like, because, you know, she's one of nine. You know, she comes from a big Irish family, and like my grandmother was the type that, you know, really kept like, you know, her freezer was packed with food, and she, you know, she was like a real collector. Like, she wasn't a hoarder, but, you know, had so much clutter. And I think it was like this fear of like scarcity. Like, it's like she thought that the potato famine was going to happen. Like, she was very scared all the time. And so I think my mom has a little bit of that, like, we have to provide for other people. We have to provide. And if we're not, if we don't have a full fridge, then we don't have anything. And so there's, if you go to my mother's house, even today, like, you will be asked 5 times before you leave if you're hungry, if you want something to eat, if you want a second serving. I mean, she's very over the top with food, and she really means well, but it can be very, like, it can come across as, you know, pushy, I think, probably.
So, but it sounds like she got away with this because she and your brother, it sounds like, had one body type, and you and your father shared the larger one.
Right. Right. And yeah, I was very like that apple shape with big belly, big all over, but a very prominent belly. And my mom and my brother were not. I mean, my mom was always, maybe she was, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 pounds, maybe 30 pounds overweight sometimes. But compared to us, it was like nothing. Compared to my dad and I, it was like, oh, she's thin. You know, it was like never like we were. And then my brother was always just very thin. And I think that when you're, you know, I always just identified, like, if you're big since your earliest memories, you just don't know that thinness is even really an option for you. You know, I think that's what I always think about. Like, and I think kids probably feel this way. If I didn't have any sense of myself, like, as a thin person, so I just felt like, oh, people are, like, thinking of me as a fat person, or if I'm being made fun of for being fat, like, that's just my character. This is just who I am. So it's not something I can change. So I just assumed, oh, this is me. This is who I am. It's not necessarily something that's, you know, fixable.
Well, it's an interesting concept then, because then, I mean, you know, slender people probably tend to walk around looking at larger people and think, oh, that person's fat. But I mean, since you got used to being big from your earliest memories, did you think that slender people looked weird to you?
I think I didn't understand. I was very confused by it because, you know, I had, like, my best friend that I've had for, you know, almost 20 years is very, very thin. I say by nature, but she's just very thin. And, you know, we seemed to always be eating the same things. Like, we would both eat, you know, cupcakes and things like Drake's cupcakes. And I seemed to be the one that was very big and she wasn't. And it took many years for me to realize that I was eating more than she was, you know, but when you're little, it just seems like you're eating all of the same foods. You're both coming home from school and having cookies and chips and all that. It just, maybe the quantities aren't the same, you know? So I think it felt like, why to lose weight? Why do I have to be different just to be the same as everyone else? Like, why do I have to act differently to fit in with the thin people when it doesn't seem like the thin people are eating necessarily healthier? You know, like, that's what it felt like as a child.
Right. So why should you have to change what you do? Yeah.
Right.
The consumption habits had a mirror. You talked about your dad being big as well. He was over 300 pounds, it sounds like, for most of the time that you were around him before he died.
Yeah.
But it was more than food for him. What else was he into?
Well, so he was just, you know, he was a very bad alcoholic he started drinking right around the time I was born. And it only got worse, you know, when I was 5, he had had like a pretty good job as a technical illustrator and he lost that job. He got laid off, when I was 5 and he never really worked again. He had like small jobs as like, he got like paper routes. But he just started drinking more and more and more and then couldn't keep a job. And so he never really worked again. And it was that addiction just kind of, I mean, it broke him down to the point where then it just fueled more eating. And so I could see addictive behaviors in almost everything he did. You know, he chain smoked. So he just kind of was spiraling out of control in so many ways. But he kind of had a number of addictions, but alcohol being obviously the worst and then the most, you know, grave.
Your dad became quite abusive verbally, ultimately. I mean, do you remember that there is a description in the book about the first time you gave it back? What happened?
Right. Well, he would get, you know, when he got very drunk and he would get very angry and then mean, and he'd be mean, you know, to my mom, and he'd, you know, he'd yell and he'd throw things at the wall and he'd smash things. And it really bothered me. My brother is 6 years older than me, but, you know, when we were young, and like, he's still a little boy, and he would be mean to my brother, and he would tease my brother like he might, like a man his own age, or like an adult. And it would bother me in a way that I would ball my fists. And in character, I think my brother and I were different in that, like, I was kind of like a little bit feistier. And I just remember like getting so angry, and one time he just was so mean to him, and I just walked up to him and I got square in his face, and I was like, I hate you. And I just, he never said anything back to me. He didn't insult me. He didn't yell at me. He looked at me, and it was like his eyes changed, like, wow, like, okay. Like, even in his state, like, he didn't, it was like, and then the sad thing that I say in the book is, like, you know, there was something, sure, there was a release in saying, I hate you, to this man who's being mean, but at the same time, I liken it to, like, I had become the bully. Like, I had then, you know, kind of expelled my rage on him. Mm-hmm. And was, how different is that than what he was doing? You know, I don't know.
Andy Mitchell's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her memoir of life, loss, and weight loss is It Was Me All Along. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about it with Andy. 800-838-3760 around the region. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So when there were things like this in the house, confrontations, your father throwing and breaking ashtrays, dropping plates of dishes, I mean, all sorts of things that were very scary. I mean, was it an immediate response that you'd go looking for food, or I mean, were you and food ever very far apart, I guess?
It wasn't ever conscious, but I remember, you know, the most traumatic probably memories that I have, even if the exact details of the memories are hazy, I can remember what I ate. You know, and when I was coming up with the proposal for the book, that was very apparent to me that, like, you know, there's a time when my dad got angry and he had a fight with my mom and he smashed his arm through the glass door. And I wrote about that experience because I could remember it, but I couldn't remember it as well as I could remember that I was sitting on my brother's floor and that I was eating caramels. And
I remember that you had to scoop up all the caramels just to get to
And I had to eat the caramels before I could leave the house to go to the emergency room. And then I could remember that when my dad died, I couldn't remember my brother's eulogy or really remember specifics around the days that my dad died, but I could remember these, like, kind of gross store-bought blueberry muffins that were, like, kind of gelled to their liners that I ate, like, one after the other the day after he died. Like, that's what I could remember. And I just thought that was so interesting that, like, I have these really traumatic moments that, and what I learned from that is that, like, I've distracted through food and covered over these memories with just these thoughts of, like, okay, well, that's what I ate. You know, that's what I ate then.
Oh, instead of the day of my dad's funeral, it's the day of the blueberry muffins, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as you read, your descriptions are very, very detailed about food. And at times where we're honestly reading it, you can start feeling a little full, like, okay, I've had enough of this cake now. Did you ever feel that full, or was it just a matter of the eating stopped when the food was gone?
I don't know if I was ever, I think there are times when I was that full, and maybe there was, like, I wanted a fullness, and even, like, to the point of sickness, because then you're, you know, a discomfort, another discomfort, like a physical discomfort would distract from like maybe an emotional or a mental discomfort. Maybe I wanted that, and maybe I achieved that. But then I think that like what I realized later in life is that like I ate and I wanted this fullness, and the problem with binge eating is that you never actually find fullness, and that's when you know that it's not about the food, sadly. And it takes you like a million years to realize it, and maybe you never actually, I don't know, actualize it. But you know, if you keep eating and you keep eating and you never really find the bottom of your hunger, then is it food that can even fill you? I guess that's the question you ask yourself after a while. That's what I've kind of asked myself in recent years, and kind of trying to gain this perspective on how I've eaten throughout my life. And the answer is the food can't fill you. So it's a kind of a sad realization.
We talked about your mom and her own attitude toward food and how she's always making sure that people got fed. All through this period, as you're getting larger and larger through adolescence, did she ever just come out and say anything to you?
No, she came out. She didn't ever. She was always incredibly supportive, and in the way of, like, you know, kind of just loving me, you know, kind of regardless of size, and not making me feel like she had a real awareness of my size. But when I started dieting in eighth grade, after I had a doctor's appointment where the doctor was like, you know, look, I mean, you're going to be well over 200 pounds, you know, by the time you hit 20 years old, like you're going to be very, very big if you continue on. That was a point where we both kind of like looked at each other like, oh no. And she started, you know, researching kind of, you know, how can we lose weight? And she suggested these, you know, medical studies at different hospitals where I would go on, you know, a prescribed medication and try to lose weight that way. And so then I kind of had this sense from her that like, she wanted me to lose weight, and I understood why, but I still didn't like that she wanted me to lose weight, because there's a discomfort in knowing that someone else wants you to change even if you want to change. And then there's also the upset that I could understand, you know, at some point, like, but you're still buying these treats and yet you want me to be smaller. You're still buying my favorite things, but you want me to be smaller too. And that was very like,
I could see you get a mixed message out of that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what kinds of things were happening, through school in these years? I mean, you mentioned, you know, your earliest memories, you were already big. So, I mean, how did the kids at school treat you? Were they ever particularly cruel, or were you okay? Did you get along with people?
I was teased, you know, off and on throughout my whole life for my size. I think I was really overall, you know, in like later in middle school and in high school, I think I was very lucky with the kids that I went to school with, let's say, or I was very lucky to have developed maybe a sense of humor and maybe a defense mechanism where I always like was very like self-deprecating and kind of made fun of myself, or I became funny. I don't know which one came first, but and so I did have a fairly good group of friends, you know, in high school, and I became kind of a joiner, you know, like later in high school, and joined a lot of clubs and somehow later did some sports and things like that, despite not wanting to.
Yeah, your description of trying to get into lacrosse was really interesting.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it was a nightmare. Like, it was like, I think they just accepted everyone. It was terrible. It's the one that I can't, I'm so unathletic, even to this day. So, but yeah, I don't know. I did okay. I've been made fun of more in my younger years than in later times.
And you mentioned some of the weight loss techniques, your mom and programs like at the hospital in Boston. Did anything mm-hmm. show any particular results at first?
You know, no, sadly, no. And I think that I feel like the diets that I started and tried and failed at really only set me up on this cycle that I think a lot of people can relate to of, you know, feeling restricted and then wanting to binge and then binging and then, you know, the repeat.
Oh, yeah, rinse and repeat. Okay, we'll come back and talk more about the struggles with weight that Andy Mitchell experienced in her life. She's done a lot to take that weight off, lost about half her body weight since her peak. It Was Me All Along is her memoir. We'll come back and talk more with Andy and take phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to Andrea Andy Mitchell. She's a freelance writer and recipe developer living in New York City. She writes about her struggles with weight. She had gained a lot of weight, weighed 268 pounds by the time she reached her 20th birthday, and caught about half that weight off over the years. The process, getting there and getting back, is listed in her memoir, It Was Me All Along. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Andy about her struggles. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we just talked about the weight loss strategies not really working. And in fact, I think after your first diet, you mentioned that you'd like gained a pound after the first week or something.
Yeah.
Yikes. So at some point, did you just say, forget it, I'm not going to do this anymore?
Yeah, at some point I just said, you know, I can't hate myself through this whole process. You know, I kind of gave up and resigned myself to my own fatness. And then there was an acceptance there that just acceptance, you know, even if you're a little bit sad about it, it's still acceptance. And that was like, you know, later in high school. And there was some freedom in that. So for a little while, I just said, you know what, I just have to just let myself be. And so I tried that for a little while. But, you know, I kept gaining in that process, too.
Now, you did go away to college off to the yes. – and I should point out you lived in the Boston suburbs or a little yes. further out than that. But went to not your first choice, University of Massachusetts, UMass Amherst.
Yes.
There's always this opportunity when you go away to college to recreate yourself. You know, you're getting in with a bunch of people who really don't know you and can be kind of a new person. And how much did you take advantage of that?
You know, I don't know. I think that is so enticing. I think a lot of people think that that you can do that. And I knew that my weight, it's funny when you're, I think the self-consciousness of carrying around weight is so hard because you know that you're kind of, your weight precedes you and that you're being judged maybe first and foremost by that, by a lot of people. Even if the people aren't judging you negatively, they're not trying to, but it's part of what, you know, people see first. But, you know, during college, my first 2 years, I really enjoyed it. I was happy. I had even found a boyfriend, you know, that I loved very much in my first, you know, after my first year of college. And so everything was going fairly well. I was doing well in school and things like that. But I think I was always really unhappy with my weight, and I was only gaining. And of course, in college, it's like you're eating out of control, kind of with pizza after drinking and all of that. So I had reached a point in sophomore year where I said, you know, I'm at my biggest, and something's got to give.
And that was the birthday cake and the 20th birthday and
yeah.
And so what were some of the first steps after that time?
I think, you know, knowing that, you know, I stepped on a scale, coming home for the summer with my, you know, I was with my best friend and so many summers before this with my best friend we had joined the YMCA and I had, you know, joined the YMCA just thinking, oh, I'm going to take some weight off for the summer. And I stepped on the scale in the locker room and I saw 268 pounds and it was so close to 300. And it was so close to knowing that my dad had been 350 pounds and just thinking, what's next? If you're at 300 and you've never really lost weight in your life, you're going to be 315, you're going to be 330. And it just, I was terrified. And it was one of those moments that you just say, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready now more than ever to just make a real change in my life. And it was that day that I really committed to exercising as much as I hated exercising, to exercising consistently and to, you know, to eating better. I mean, at first I really just tried to eat better in my own kind of decided way, which was, you know, just eat more fruits and vegetables. And then eventually I tried Weight Watchers, which I think gave me a good foundation for understanding, like, what is a serving size, which is something I had no idea what a serving size was. What is, like, a portion? What is, you know, what are calories? That sort of thing. I think that really helped me.
Well, what were some of the first reactions, though? Like, I can imagine for somebody who really didn't see an end to things, that the portion sizes might have shocked you at first, did they?
Oh, they were shocking. I mean, I was like, what is this? Like, when you realize that, you know, I mean, I was eating, like, probably restaurant servings, if not more, you know, and that's like, you know, you go to a restaurant and you get like a piece of chicken. It's like, maybe it's like 10 ounces. It's like, it takes up half of your plate, you know? And then you realize that a serving of chicken, they say, is roughly the size of a deck of cards. You're like, what are you talking about? it's eye-opening. It was like relearning to walk. I mean, I had never had any food boundaries. I had never, you know, been told what I had to eat, what I should eat. So it was a completely, like, totally new way of life. And I liked it. I thought it was kind of fun for a little while because I thought, oh, weight loss has a finish line. And, I mean, of course it doesn't. I realized that it didn't have a finish line, that you have to, like, learn how to maintain your weight. But there was something kind of nice about, you know, I don't know, kind of seeing results and, you know, feeling like I was doing what I said I'd do. And not to say that it was easy. I was certainly, like, very, you know, I was struggling at many points in the journey, but it, you know, there was something really amazing about keeping a promise to myself, because that's one of the bigger problems we have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Keeping promises, sure. Let's take a call here.
Yeah.
Here's Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Andy Mitchell. Her memoir about weight loss is It Was Me All Along.
Yeah, hi, Andy. My name's Sandy, and my last name happens to be Mitchell.
Wow.
That's right. Andy Mitchell.
Way. But my question for you, and maybe forgive me if it's kind of uninformed because I tuned in late and I haven't heard that much, but your book sounds very intriguing. And I'm someone who has, you know, for the last 10 years, been thinking consistently, you know, I really do need to lose about 40 pounds. I mean, I hide it pretty well, apparently, because people are always telling me, oh, you're not overweight. But I know that I'm overweight. And I know that my joints and my body and everything else would, you know, give a breath of relief if I were to somehow shed that. But I also know that my eating sounds like you had a very traumatic upbringing, and I did also. And I know that a lot of my eating is learned as a substitute for affection, as a substitute for, you know, a lot of things, a lot of emotional needs, essentially. And I think I'm probably not alone in that for a lot of men. I'm wondering if you have found any significant differences, say, between the way men approach this weight loss issue and the way women do.
Oh, good question for gender differences there. Thanks for that, Sandy. Appreciate it. Andy, I don't know how much you've had a chance to talk to other people going through the process, men in particular.
You know, that's really interesting. And I feel like that must be, you know, I get so many emails, and this is like the most amazing part about having written the book and writing the blog and kind of, you know, talking really openly about my struggles, is getting kind of feedback from people who have struggled. And the one thing that I find is that people, like, none of us are alone in this, and I've gotten emails from men, and I have to think it must be so hard for men, because you're not always so, it's not so socially acceptable maybe to talk about maybe the emotional components that like lead us to eat. You know, with men, it's like, oh, you're fat, just like work on losing weight. But with women, we're so comforting each other and we're so open and we allow ourselves to be vulnerable. So I haven't talked to a lot of men, but I have so much, I don't know, like not more heart, but almost. I really respect that. I think about like even with my dad and his weight, I think, you know, here is a man who, you know, he had a very traumatic upbringing of his own. And I think the reason he struggled with food and addiction and alcohol is because of, you know, like lack of affection and, you know, forms of abuse in his life and things like that. And I don't know that he ever felt like he could really talk about it with me or anyone in our family. And that is a humongous travesty.
You write in the book about one of the key moments when your mom came to visit you. Did she ever actually say anything? I just get the feeling she was communicating with her eyes about what she thought about how much bigger you'd still gotten.
No, she never said anything. And I think the way my mom and I are, like, we're extremely open. You know, we say everything. There's nothing left unsaid. But with that, it was like we couldn't say anything about that. I couldn't ask her and she couldn't say it because she really saw me for the first time, not having seen me in a few months, and I had gotten to the biggest point of my life. I think she finally recognized, like, oh, wow, you're maybe not okay now. And that was, I mean, here's this person who's just accepted me unconditionally forever, who's recognizing there might be something about me that needs to change, and that was really eye-opening to me. That was like, that was almost a turning point. I felt like alone, very alone at that moment.
Did any health problems ever develop? I mean, did you get to the point where you were on the verge of diabetes or any other issues?
No, thankfully, no. Thankfully, I didn't. I'm very lucky about that, but I'm sure I would have been well on my way.
So you talked about approaches, and we got into talking about the Weight Watchers and at least recognizing what a portion size was. I'm just curious, though, because that was sort of one of the early stages of the process of beginning to drop off the weight. And of course, now you still work with food and are around food a lot. Was there ever like a food divorce for you? Was there a time when you just cleared out the cupboards and said, I'm just going to have the lean cuisine in the freezer and that's all that's going to be in my house?
I mean, you know, during the process of weight loss, do you mean?
Right.
I'm trying to think. I certainly was, you know, when I was losing weight, I saw this goal line for me and I was like, I'm going to sprint there. I'm just going to sprint there. This is just how I do things. Like I have a goal and I'm just going to do it. But so I really tried to kind of divorce myself from, you know, sweets for me. I think as you can tell from the book, sweets for me are like really my thing. So I tried to really limit dessert foods. And so those were probably the thing that I said, I really have to just like, either I have to all or nothing those because I can't like sliver of cake anything, you know?
Yeah.
That's just not who I am.
It's got to be the actual serving, the old serving.
Yeah, I can't, you know, like, it's just, even a sliver of cake is like 300 calories, and you're like, oh, God, that's the half the day. I can't, what is happening here?
How much exercise went along with reducing portions and getting sweets away?
I started, you know, at the first half of my weight loss process, I was just, you know, I was going to the gym, and I was doing, you know, the elliptical, or I was, you know, power walking or whatever. But the second half, I started jogging, which turned into what I call running, which I'm still not clear on what the difference is. But I was running like, oh gosh, like 5 to 6 days a week. I gather which is a lot of running. But I ran like 3 miles. And then later, when I was really close to the end of, like when I was probably like 15 pounds away, I was up to like 4 miles, 5 miles, like 5 days a week. And I was really proud of myself because I didn't even think I'd ever want to be a person who ran. And here I was, like, you know, not out of breath. I could carry on a conversation if I wanted to.
Wow. So the process of have you kept up the same exercise regime and just try to eat in small portions generally?
Yeah. Generally, I mean, now I don't run because I really hate it, but it's, you know, it's balance. I've found a happy balance now.
Well, there's a lot to learn in the book, not just about what you went through, but what other people might take from it as well. The memoir about weight loss is called It Was Me All Along. Andy Mitchell weighs about half what she did at the from the opening moment in the book. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right, take care.